Unity, the strength and the sure success.
Welcome back. Hour number two Unity of the fabulous Vinnie Eastwood Show. Broadcasting live from the marvelous, sunny, slave state capital of New Zealand and our fabulous fluoride head fortress, New Zealand. We have a very special guest for you, ladies and gentlemen, joining us as part of our Kiwi Collaborator segment today. And hopefully we usually bring out about, I don't know, about maybe five Kiwi Collaborators a week, I'm trying to average. And, quite frankly, we have got some incredibly bright people in this country who are fighting to restore justice in so many ways across, ridiculous amounts of sectors, really. And the person that we've got on today for you is extremely awesome. Her name is Maria Bradshaw, and she knows an awful lot about suicide. Maria, welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Hey, thank you.
Give us a little bit of background about yourself, love. You lost one of your child and you to suicide?
Yeah, Torrin's my only child, and at the age of 17, he committed suicide in 2008.
Mm-mm-mm. And of course, it's a symptom of a wider problem. After all, New Zealand has the highest suicide rate for youth in the world. How has that all come about?
Well, when we say New Zealand has the highest suicide rate for youth, I mean, it's really important to say that it's twice the rate of America, twice the rate of Australia, and five times the rate of the UK. So it's absolutely astronomical here. And one of the reasons for that is that we also have one of the highest rates of prescribing of antidepressants, antipsychotics, and other psychotropic drugs to children.
Whoa! You mean we're doping up our kids on huge amounts of dangerous pharmaceutical drugs that say on the warning labels may cause suicide in order to save them from being a little bit depressed?
Yeah, totally. And while in the United States they have a warning label that says may cause suicide, mania, psychosis, worsening depression and all the rest of it, in New Zealand they have no warnings on them at all, not even a little leaflet in the packet warning you of risks and side effects.
And do they have lists of benefits, you know, like may cause drowsiness and dizziness?
New Zealand is certainly very big on hyping the benefits of these drugs, which is a complete lie. Clinical trials show that they have little or no effectiveness above placebo.
Well, it's an oxymoron to say the benefits of psychotropic drugs, isn't it?
Totally. They don't have any benefits, as has been proven. But they expose people. I mean, the drug my son was on has 1,817 listed side effects by the manufacturer. Mm. You know, really nasty stuff, not only your suicide and psychosis and stuff, but cardiac arrest, infertility.
You name it.
Yeah.
A friend of mine was in a psychiatric institution for a short period of time. I texted him about four text messages full of nothing but symptoms, and he said, bro, I have them all. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio. We'll be right back momentarily with our very special guest, Maria Bradshaw.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know. It's gonna rain, rain, rain.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, Rush 89 FM in Hamilton, proudly brought to you in conjunction with GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. And it's interesting, our somewhat fabulous producer always says that the interesting thing about this show, well, in fact, he goes, you know what's really interesting? Is that, we're New Zealanders who know more about the US Constitution and Bill of Rights than the average American person our age does. Yeah. How very strange is that? Our very special guest, our Kiwi collaborator for today, her name is Maria Bradshaw, and she's been researching into the exponential, some sort of suicidal pharmaceutical pandemic that we've got here with youth suicide rates. Maria, welcome back.
Thank you.
Now, could you please continue on? Because one thing that I really wanted to know is, we talked about this and we debated this about the reasons why the suicide rates are so high in this country. And one of them is pharmaceutical drugs. And another point that we brought up earlier in the show was the breakdown of the family unit itself.
Yeah, the group that I run, our basic premise is that suicide is not a medical issue. You know, going around like we do in New Zealand, doing psychiatric screens on all four-year-olds and giving them a label and giving them a drug is not the way to go. Suicide is a social issue. It's a response to social problems. And we know in New Zealand that we have high rates of family breakdown. We have the highest rate in the OECD of teen pregnancy. We have a real issue with our children binge drinking. There are all sorts of social things that are going on. Recently reported that we have one of the highest rates of income disparity in the world, which is a known trigger for suicide. Multifactorial, lots of things going on, none of which are going to be cured by giving children bottles of pills.
Yeah, well, and this is an interesting debate that I had with a communist the other day. I said to him, no pharmaceutical drug has ever cured any condition. And he says, yes, they have. And I say, all right, name one.
Yeah.
The blank stare was all the evidence that I needed.
Yeah, you are totally, totally right. And what's interesting, too, is that in my son's inquest, seven psychiatrists testified on the other side, to support the District Health Board, but all seven agreed that these drugs double the risk of suicide in people under the age of 24. But they don't tell you that when you're in the doctor's surgery getting a prescription for them.
A friend of mine was in a psychiatric institution, as I said, and I came into one of the meetings with them, and they had this incredibly tall, lanky, effeminate psychologist who kind of like looked down on everybody and that kind of thing. Just kind of like they know it all. It's you know what it felt like to me, Mary. It felt like some type of satanic worship. That's what it really felt like to me, man. I don't want to get all religious or anything on here, but the guy just felt to me like a real sociopath. Somebody who doesn't really care about human emotions, human events. They look at them as though they're guinea pigs and rats to be dissected and studied, rather than human beings who need to be cared for and loved and protected.
Hey, totally. In New Zealand, there are 10 suicides every week. Many are chemically induced. 10% of our 10-year-olds, their deaths are suicide. And our children in New Zealand, there are more suicides than deaths from all medical causes combined. And they're just seen as collateral damage. My baby was a boy who had broken up with the first love of his life and wanted some counselling. But the New Zealand government says it's cheaper to give kids pills than to talk to them and help them develop some skills to work through that stuff. Torrin was diagnosed as having no mental disorder, no depression, no nothing. Given Prozac, told he could drink alcohol with it. And 15 days later, my normal, healthy child, who was going through a normal life event of breaking up with a girlfriend, made the garden hose into a noose and hung himself in our garage. And at his inquest, there was a lot of shrugging of shoulders. Oh, well, this stuff happens, nothing we can do about it. When the question was asked, would you do anything differently next time? The answer was no, don't think so. There's a total casual attitude about suicide in New Zealand. Anything else killing 10 people a week in this country, we'd be declaring a state of national emergency and, you know, doing the swine flu thing. But nobody seems to care.
Well, and I find that in our day-to-day society, we've kind of got this this sort of level of, I don't know, what I would call manufactured apathy. People have this idea in their heads that they are not powerful, they don't have enough intellect to process situations, and or they don't have enough time to really focus or solve any problems. And so, therefore, the obvious relationship emerges that, hey, anytime there's a problem, the best thing to do is either ignore it or manage it, not solve it, you know? And people forget that if you are capable of understanding what sort of psychological condition you're in, and I'm not saying I believe in psychology, I believe that the term bedlam comes from a psychological house in England where they locked up mental patients into stone-cold rooms and charged admission so people could see all these so-called crazy people and that kind of thing. The only reason why they were crazy so much is because they were locked up and experimented on like guinea pigs.
I mean, you should read the history of psychiatry. I mean, it was a recognised treatment to put people into a coffin and lower them into freezing cold water. It's been a recognised treatment to put an ice pick through somebody's eye into their brain. You know, we used to have lobotomies, and now these drugs are referred to as chemical lobotomies. The history of psychiatry is a history of complete and total failure. And when you talked before about, you know, the kind of religious overtones, I mean, I'm not a religious person at all, but if I had to define evil, I would say that rather than stabbing somebody to death, inducing them to stab themselves or put a rope around their neck or jump in front of a train is my definition of evil, particularly when you're talking about inducing a child to do that.
And, you know, people think that, oh, it's just accidental or they're just doing their job or that kind of thing. And in my opinion, that's just mindless, heartless justifications for evil, you know, which is almost as bad as doing it intentionally, as allowing it to happen via your own arrogance, stupidity and apathy.
Oh, totally, and you can keep your hands clean, can't you? But the reality is, somebody gives you poison, you take it and you die, that person killed you.
Yeah.
They might not have blood dripping off the end of their fingers, but they still killed you.
Yeah, it's called a causal link, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
I mean, come on here.
And all these toxins that we find laced throughout society, whether it's aspartame or fluoride or MSG, I mean, you find a lot of these binders, particularly fluoride, used in all these psychotropics they try and lay on children. I mean, just what they're riddled with alone and the flow-on effects from some of the binders and the chemicals they use to put the body into a state of shock in order to get reactions sometimes. And then they just say they died of anaphylactic shock or, you know, they make up some excuse.
Yeah,
I mean, it's reckless.
Yeah, it absolutely is. You know, and the coroner found in my son's inquest that the information Torrin and I were given about these drugs, the words he used were outdated, misleading and inaccurate. We were told, for example, in the pamphlet that if we read anything about the links between suicide and the drugs, we should understand that that was an invention of the media. Well, actually, that is proven through numerous clinical trials. So we were lied to and misled. And, you know, you can't imagine how betrayed we feel by the government doing that to us.
Yeah, yeah. And so the biggest killer of the 20th century is people's own governments.
Yeah. And you're totally right about the apathy. I mean, you know, if I had a dollar for every time I've been told, you can't fight the government, you can't fight the pharmaceutical companies. Well, you know what? I sold my home and I live in a garage now. You know, I used to earn a six-figure salary. I was a chief executive. I can and will fight these people until the day I die because what they're doing is wrong and it needs to be exposed. And it just takes, you know, I'm building an army of angry mothers whose children have been murdered. And we won't lie down.
Yeah, yeah. So if there's one thing I know as a young man who's recently left the roost, you don't want to mess with an angry mother.
That's totally true. Ask Waitemata District Health Board. You know, I was denied access to information about my son's medical care. And so, you know, here I am, a nice middle class, you know, well-educated woman. I staged a sit-in at North Shore Hospital and I was arrested and trespassed and, you know, my son would have been just pissing himself laughing at his mother being dragged away by the police. But I got the medical records the next day. I mean, in the end, you just do what you have to do and it can be done.
Yeah, no, I've seen it. And, I mean, I've been arrested half a dozen times and I've had people sort of pick at me and laugh at me and, huh, you're going to get arrested again as if it's skin off my teeth or something. It's like, ah, you're going to get screwed over again, you little fool. I mean, and it just happens over and over and over. I mean, people need to put their foot down once in a while and just say no. And it doesn't matter whether what social class we're from here. This isn't a popularity contest.
Yeah.
No, yeah. It's about, I mean, look at all these school shootings we've seen in the States. Look at these young guys we've seen out going, you know, and blow people's heads off. This last guy being Jared Loughner. Once again, heavy user of psychotropic drugs. We saw it with the Columbine school shootings. We saw it with the UT shooting. I mean, this is a common factor that's going on here, and it's not being discussed, and people are calling it wild theories. And the same people that say you can't defeat the government or the corporations would call us conspiracy theorists for saying how powerful and how much control they have over our lives. But then they say we can't do anything about them.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and we totally can. Like, I don't think that many people would have seen recently the WikiLeaks cable that showed that the pharmaceutical companies tried to have Helen Clark removed as health minister and tried to threaten us that we wouldn't get a free trade agreement if we stopped allowing clinical trials and put any barriers to using these drugs in this country. You know, that's fact. It's in the WikiLeaks cables. It's not a conspiracy theory. But I don't believe that this will change in the Beehive or at the Ministry of Health. It'll be people on the street like me and like people who suddenly realise that the before school checks we're doing on all four-year-olds in New Zealand have the psychiatric screening component in them, where parents are being asked to diagnose their children with psychiatric illnesses as a way of getting them on psychotropic drugs. When we say enough, we don't want this, we're sick of our 9 and 10-year-olds committing suicide, we can change the world. You know, it's the people, and this is an election year. And if people feel, you know, powerless and don't know what to do, then, you know, I can give you a million things that you can do every day that can change this situation. You're not powerless at all.
Yeah, and most of them don't even include voting. I mean, people need to see that we've got the system of compromise, pretty much, where everyone's just narrowed in focus, and the doctors get free holidays to Fiji if they sell enough, if they push enough of Merck's product. You know, this is public.
Yep.
And everyone just compromises and goes along with it, and keeps out of each other's business. But at the same time, they're intrinsically involved in our business and getting more and more involved in our lives. And the government says, look, we just care about your kids and we want to analyze them. And it's all about, it's just like in the States, everyone's got a shrink. It's ridiculous. You know, it's all about saying everyone's got some condition. Everyone's crazy on some level. Hey, they probably diagnosed me with about 10 different syndromes. And then say, look, we've got to force these drugs on you your whole life. You can never get off them because otherwise you'll come down so hard you kill yourself.
Yeah, totally. And look, you know, you are absolutely right that according to the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Psychiatry, there's not a person in the world who wouldn't have a mental disorder. You know, grief. I was sectioned and put into a psych hospital after my son died, primarily for saying that the mental health system had killed him. And they said at the time that I didn't have a mental disorder. I was suffering from normal bereavement. But the system's just been changed. And if you are sad for more than 2 weeks after you find your child hanging from a noose, you have major depressive disorder. I mean, it would be disordered not to be sad when your only child commits suicide. It's just crazy stuff.
Well, it's
because these spiders,
everything that's reasonable and everything that's natural becomes something that's wrong to the eyes of a psychiatrist. You know, for example, a friend of mine, he was put on two extremely heavy psychotropic drugs, and the reason that he was put on those is because he, quote, had an elevated mood. He was smiling and he was happy.
I know. Look, if you want a good laugh someday, read the DSM. You know, mathematical learning disorder. If you're not good at maths, that's a psychiatric disorder. Sibling relational disorder, if you don't get on well with your brothers and sisters. The list is endless. And we know that these disorders, there's no science behind them. They're voted in and out. You know, homosexuality was a mental disorder until politically it became unsustainable, and so they voted it out. Can you imagine real doctors voting in and out heart disease or diabetes? This is an absolute made-up construct, which, you know, is done in conjunction with pharmaceutical companies who develop a drug for all these new disorders. It's completely corrupt.
And people can't see it. People think the government's out there to help them. And then, and you know, the corporate influence is minimal, or you know, occurs once in a blue moon. And that's what I say. We need a republic. That's why. That's my solution. Is we have a constitutional republic where these foreign multinational corps can't get involved in our policy formation, and where our politicians have their feet held to the fire by binding laws that would have them just about hung themselves if they don't, you know, if they don't enact the will of the people.
Yeah, totally. You know, one of the things we're doing at the moment is we've just written a letter to every politician in New Zealand saying there are 10 suicides a week. You know, as I said before, more children die from suicide in this country than all medical causes combined. Your votes this year from a large sector of the population, because, you know, we're the biggest victim group in the country, those of us bereaved by suicide. Your votes this year, guys, will depend on your response to suicide, what you're actually prepared to do about stopping chemically induced suicide in this country. And we will be publishing on our website the responses that we get to those.
All right. And our very special guest is Maria Bradshaw, talking about suicide rates in New Zealand and the fabulous pharmaceutical philanthropy. And we will be right back momentarily with more disturbing news.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's broadcasting everywhere, man. This is the Finney Eastwood Show with Will. Our very special guest on our Kiwi Collaborator segment today is Maria Bradshaw. And we've been talking over the break that her son, being a very nice, strapping young lad and kind of a poster boy for youth suicide in this country, has actually even received a fair amount of mainstream reporting. And we talked about, oh, well, did they spin it at all? But, you know, basically they have to do what's ironically called in the journalism industry balanced reporting by giving the the psychologist a chance to defend their undefensible statements. Hey, but I was wondering, though, have you seen the movie Love and Other Drugs, where the main interest guy works for Pfizer, and they make the job look cool, and they say in the film how they're making drugs available to diseases they make up?
I haven't seen it, but that actually sounds like my life. Hey, you might be interested. You know how there's been the big John Kirwan campaign in New Zealand, which has really been about social marketing of depression, get everybody to diagnose themselves and go and ask for drugs.
Yeah.
when you go on the government's website, depression.org, you can do a self-test for depression that you take along to your doctor. Have a look at the bottom of the test where it says copyrighted to Pfizer Incorporated.
That's not a vested interest at all.
And when I asked the Ministry of Health why they were using a drug company developed test, they said, oh, because it's free, other people would charge us.
Oh, they just collect billions of tax revenue. They can't afford a simple program.
Precisely, yeah.
Oh, for F's sake. I remember I was actually asking a psychiatrist now about the drugs that he had my mate on, and he told me the names of them, and I go, really? Okay, so have they been double-blind tested? And he goes, oh, well, you'll have to do that research yourself. And I go, I'll take that as a no.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the difficulties that they've run into with me is that I graduated with my MBA 5 weeks after my son died. And you're actually taught in medical school in New Zealand that if a parent blames the mental health system for the death of their child, that that is not logical or rational. It's a grief reaction. And I made this rule for myself that I wouldn't say anything publicly that I couldn't back up with at least 2 independent sources of information. And, you know, I'm a smart woman with a good education, and they find it really difficult to argue with me because the data that I have, they can't argue with, you know, which has really pissed them off enormously.
What sort of evidence is our textbook says that when a mother blames the system for, you know, such a loss, that she's automatically wrong? And it's true because we say so, because some freak wrote it. I mean,
yeah, because you understand, don't you, that when my son died, my brain did as well.
Of course, of course, totally. All your neural connections just fizzed out. It's just like a big short circuit.
What happened to my synapse?
I just hate these people. I just hate how people can be institutionalized like that. They call themselves smart. I mean, you have to get... When I was at school, it was like getting 400 out of 500 in seventh form to get a bursary to get into med school. I got enough to get into engineering, which was like 300 or something. And so I wasn't smart enough for med school. And my med school mates are elite, you know. And it's like, no, you stupid sons of, you know, you guys are just taking this stuff.
Hey, well, you know something really funny? At my son's inquest, the coroner asked the doctor who gave him the drugs, so if he didn't have a diagnosis of depression, you know, why were you medicating him? And this guy said, well, in the notes, his mother said he was bright, beautiful and popular, and so I thought he had narcissistic personality traits. Well, for a start off, it's not a mental disorder to have a mother who's proud of you. But interestingly, the world of psychiatry has just recently said there's no such thing as narcissistic personality disorder. It's been voted out.
That would probably be because every single psychologist would be diagnosed with it.
You know, after that guy said that in the inquest, I said to my friend who was there, being called a narcissist by a psychiatrist is like being called aggressive by a serial killer. Hello.
You know, and some people would say, oh, that's too harsh to say that. No, it isn't.
But they're beyond scrutiny. They're outside the table.
Anybody who's met a psychiatrist would, I mean, they do have this real God complex.
Well, you know, I think we should rename the DSM as just the BSM.
In my circles, we call it the damn silly manual or the drug supplier's manual.
The drug supplier's manual. Hey, well, it's kind of like this massive fat as gravy train that they got going, you know. Line your children up, ladies and gentlemen. It's like a circus, really. And the children are basically just these kind of animals in cages to these people that are to perform tricks and that kind of thing so that they can, you know, fill and jam-pack the big top with all the pundits and fans and screaming and jump down their popcorn. They don't care.
Oh, look, honestly, you should read the questions in the psychiatric screen for the 4-year-olds. You know, does your child look out the window when you're reading them a story? Well, you know, that's an indicator of a psychiatric disorder. Does your child interrupt adult conversations? There's another indicator. And, you know, we should be really concerned that we are screening every 4-year-old in this country with a view to labelling them with a mental disorder.
Well, yeah, and it's the thing in everywhere in the Western world, I'd probably say venture a guess with ADHD, for example, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. My mother was, in fact, given a pamphlet, right, with all these different symptoms, for example, being creative, being highly intelligent, doing artwork, not listening on occasion, being a little bit restless, running around, playing games. These are all indicators of somebody being ADHD.
I know. And, you know, so every normal human behavior is being characterized as a mental disorder. And not only that is, you know, the bullshit about valuing diversity, absolute rubbish. Unless your moods and behaviours comply with an increasingly narrow range of what's seen as normal, you're disordered.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. our producer as well, his son was going to be prescribed Ritalin medication, and it was kind of like forced by a school board sort of thing. And to this day, he thanks him for making sure that the school board couldn't put it on him.
Yeah, look, Ritalin is cocaine. The drug that my son was given, Prozac, has, according to the FDA, the same stimulant profile as amphetamines.
Sorry, what?
I'm not trying to make it sound attractive, okay? The reality is, if you've got children who are struggling with, you know, difficult life circumstances, mum and dad splitting up, break up with a girlfriend, problems at school, or whatever, giving them cocaine or amphetamines, I mean, you know, how is that going to help them? And in fact, of course, what the clinical data shows is what it does is induces them to kill themselves. I have an autopsy report on my computer from a 7-year-old on the same drug as my son, who put a rope around his neck and hung himself.
Mm. I mean, according to psychiatry, the best kind of parental figure is like Tony Montana.
I mean, the way I see it, Maria, and I don't know what your geopolitical views are, but the list is no mine, and it's all part of a systematic kill-off of society, and because they can't just come into our homes and hold guns to our head just yet, they have to do it systemically. And they have to make it so that it can be blamed on just a myriad of problems, and very, very, very few people can actually boil it down and actually have the capacity to work it all out. And this is where I see the psychology, this drive coming from, to marginalize human nature and to train in their form of social Darwinism, to train us to be obedient worker drone slaves. And orderly execute ourselves, effectively. Like, they're training our kids to commit suicide with TV and video games that, regardless of that whole argument, people cannot deny that all imagery, all of what we see, imprints on our subconscious.
Well, even today, school children's books, I think it was in the United States, an article came out that children as young as 5 are now learning about suicide in school.
Yeah. And look, one of the issues I had with my son's school and with the Ministry of Education is that for level 1 NCEA English, he studied the Shawshank Redemption. And so he repeatedly saw images of the guy, you know, the character Brooke, hanging himself. And when I asked, so what discussion was around that in terms of what alternatives did Brooke have? What impact would this have on his family? You know, is this a good response to stressful life events? I was told that the children are allowed to watch these movies, but suicide prevention must not be discussed in schools. And so Torrens exposed to these images with no discussion of alternatives or impacts. That is so wrong.
But they can discuss sex and everything like that. You know, I mean, they can discuss snitching on your parents.
Oh,
if
totally.
They raise their hand at you or something.
Yeah, you know, and I've extensively reviewed the literature on copycat suicides. And, you know, what the literature actually says is that talking about suicide is protective. And we know, you know, we heard all that if we give kids sex education, they'll all rush out and get pregnant, which, you know, was crap. If we talk to kids about suicide, they will not all rush out and kill themselves. They know about suicide, but they have a lot of misinformation, and no social problem's ever been solved through silence.
But and larger than that, they're not told to. They're not taught to value life, though, are they? I mean, our society being trained to appreciate just how amazing life is in general.
Yeah.
I mean, does that sentiment come through at all, really?
I don't think so at all. You know, there's just this huge blanket of silence, except for the psychiatrists and selected researchers who are allowed to talk about this stuff, and they control all the thinking around it.
So we've got this priesthood, haven't we? We've got this priesthood of intellectuals who write this legislation, then they frame the debates and they make the people.
Homus, yep. Homini, hominitatis. I was surprised they're not wearing big red hooded cloaks, you know, when they walk in with their white lab coats on.
But they leave that for Bohemian Grove every second weekend in July.
Oh yeah, that's a weekend attire, you know.
But listen, what you were talking about before in terms of control, I mean, when I was first exposed to the idea that psychiatry spawned eugenics and was behind a lot of what happened in Nazi Germany, I thought, oh, my God, that sounds like such a ridiculous conspiracy theory. But it's absolutely true. And certainly the psychiatry is targeted in New Zealand to young Māori and Pacific people who are dying from suicide in the most, you know, appalling numbers. There's no doubt in my mind that this is part of a wider eugenics program.
And you know that the Huxleys and the Darwins and the Wells were behind the British move for eugenics, and that the British actually inspired the Nazis.
Yeah,
it's just an offshoot of them.
Yeah, and you wouldn't believe how often I'm told that the death of my son is just Darwinism at work, that when children commit suicide, it's just nature weeding out the weak.
Yeah, it was very strange. I mean, I was walking along the road one time with a friend of mine in Dunedin, and we saw these two kids playing with a shopping trolley in the middle of the road. And I said, "Hey, man, we should go over there and tell them to get out of the middle of the road." And he goes, "Oh, all right, natural selection."
Yeah,
just, you know,
yeah, natural selection would have these psychiatrists that things hanging in. I mean, they're weak, vassal. I don't know how to describe them. I know there's a. We did a show once on psychiatrists in general, Vinny, and I received a bit of flack over it. I'll stand by it. I mean, they are just real limp-wristed. I mean, not limp-wristed in the connotation of sexual orientation, but limp-wristed souls, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Like, they're not willing to back up what's right or anything like that, but they are willing to write out a prescription.
Hey, and look, this is not science. It is not medicine. Psychiatry has no biological test. You know, what we get told all the time is that people are given antidepressants to cure a brain chemistry imbalance. That is complete nonsense.
Yeah, well, it makes sense that it's all nonsense when it doesn't work when they say that it does. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Our very special Kiwi collaborator today till the end of the hour is Maria Bradshaw talking about suicide. And we'll be right back momentarily.
We're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah. It's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean.
That's what
you mean.
You mean
it's business time. Oh.
It's business.
Yeah.
It's business time.
Yeah. Psychiatric foreplay on the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. Yeah. You say something to me like, you've got me tied down in bed, I can't move, but I know what you mean. You mean it's, oh yeah, it's business time. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Our very special guest, Maria Bradshaw, joins us. And we've been talking about post-traumatic stress syndrome. And, you know, basically, let's cut the BS here. Psychiatry is one of the biggest death manufacturing industries in the world, second only to the arms industry. Whose stated intention is death. You know, and the disparity, and we were talking about children and how it's not the adults that have supported you in what you're doing here, campaigning to get the truth out about these kind of things. It's in fact the children. And my assumption was that the children just haven't been brainwashed long enough.
Yeah, after Torren died, you know, there was all this scrambling for people to defend themselves. And, you know, they said stuff like, oh, well, he must have had undiagnosed depression. And adults bought that because they wanted to believe that doctors were not killing our children. Whereas Torren's friends, the teenagers, they just said absolute bullshit. Torren was a normal, healthy kid, just like us. And if they can do this to him, they could do it to us. And we're going to work with Maria to stop it. So I've had enormous support from teenagers who seem to be able to see really clearly what's happening here and the lies that are being told, while adults are desperately scrambling to maintain their belief that the system is trustworthy.
Well, because after all, they've had a long time to create this false reality, and they've got a lot riding on it, you know? I mean, imagine if you woke up tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen, and you realize that, like, for example, you weren't human, like you were a cyborg or something like that. You know, you'd go through some description of transitional period and denial and this, that, and the other. And I suppose currently, with all our psychological conditioning, we are really in this kind of full spectrum denial world. You know what I'm saying? It's like if you've ever been zorbing, that's when you've got this enormous inflatable ball. And you're just running it down an enormous hill. This is one of the great tourist attractions that you have here in New Zealand. As far as I'm concerned, it's a metaphor for the reality that we've got here. We're cushioned by something that's full of nothing but hot air that allows us to run around without getting hurt. And as soon as we fall out of it, we break an arm or something and we wish we never had.
Yeah, and I said to you before, you know, on the 20th of March 2008 when my son died, after having raised my son, you know, the policeman is your friend. Tell the doctor about things. Doctors are there to help you. You know, your school's there to support you and all the rest. I was forcibly ejected from the matrix. Everything in the world that I had believed in was turned upside down and back to front. And the other people around me, my family, my friends, they didn't want to be thrown out of the matrix like that. And so they really, you know, scrambled to justify what had been done to Torren and to fit it within, you know, all their values and beliefs that they'd grown up with.
It's horrible. It's Stockholm Syndrome. They're addicted to tyranny. They're addicted to big government. They're addicted to the cushioning, cozy feel it gives them at night. And then you know, when something happens, when we see a life and death scenario and all the walls come down because we see the system for what it is, this evil parasitic thing that it is, then we can realize it, but other people aren't in that headspace and they won't put themselves there. And that is their own weakness because, I mean, it should be part of our being as humans that we can think outside the box, that we're not just subservient animals.
Yeah, and of course, you know, part of that was shutting me up by labeling me as mentally disordered for challenging, you know, those things that I'd believed, by sectioning me, dragging me out of my bed and putting me into a psychiatric hospital, despite the fact that they couldn't find any mental disorder.
Well, rail on these people. I mean, rail on them. Here's your opportunity, man. I say rail on them. If you don't want to, I will. Because, you know, I know that doesn't really solve anything, but, I mean, these people need to be made. They need to be shook up. You've got to grab them and tell them, you know, we're free beings, you little bastards. You can't do this to us.
Oh, you know, one of the psychiatrists said to me, you know, desperately looking for a mental disorder, he said, I understand that on your son's 18th birthday, you were overheard by your neighbours talking to him, because it was 7 weeks after he died and the kids had gone out and gone to the observatory and had a star named after Torrin for his 18th birthday. And I looked up at the sky and I found the brightest star and I said, "Happy birthday, baby. Mummy misses you." And the psychiatrist told me that was a mental disorder.
You were overheard by what, citizen spies or something?
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
My neighbours called the mental health system.
Are you kidding me?
No, and I was dragged out of my bed at midnight by 5 police officers, handcuffed and taken into the hospital. When I got there, they took me straight up for x-rays because they thought my wrist was broken and they photographed extensive bruising on me. You know, I was a grieving mum. I'd lost my only child 7 weeks beforehand.
That's a bad movie.
That's how I was treated.
These idiot police and these scum freaking psychiatrists.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you so much, Maria, for coming on the show and sharing your story with us. It's been probably one of the best Kiwi collaborator interviews that we've ever had. Thank you so much from the bottom of my heart.
You are so welcome, and thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Hey, we'll probably give it to you again sometime, love.
Yeah,
don't worry.
Don't worry.
Yeah. Next time we interview Maria, it'll be live from psychiatric lockdown.
Hey, and listen, if people want to know more about this, check out our website, www.casper.org.nz.
Casper.org.nz. We'll be back later on, ladies and gentlemen. Catch you later. Thanks for listening. We love you.